Hello, everybody. If you listen to these episodes as they come out, thank you. And also, you've been waiting for a little bit for this episode. That's because as we start to record this show better, we are also learning how to record at all, and myself how to edit and sort of mix. Part of that process is fucking things up, which I have been doing for about a week and a half. Problems have been fixed, though, luckily, so your listening experience today should be okay. Two things to look out for on this episode is that you might catch what sounds like audio glitches or little just sort of like feedback or whatever. Super rare. In me listening back, I only heard it twice. You might also hear at the end, we had to go to our backup recording. So the last 2 minutes are going to sound a lot like our first episodes. And that really is just for the last 2 or 3 minutes. And I think that the rest of the episode sounds pretty good, all things considered. And they're only going to start sounding better and better, thanks to all the lessons that I've sort of been forced to learn lately. So moving forward, subscribe and look out for us on Sundays with new episodes, because we are really trying to hit that goal of being, we just want to be a more consistent and better sounding podcast for you guys. So thank you for bearing with us, and without further ado, here is Blade Runner Part 2. I'm going to choose not to say that again. That's the take. That's the way I'm going to have said that.
Welcome to Development Hell, one of four podcasts diving deep into the troubled roads of our favorite movies, musicals, movies, music, and more. And how the roads that they took to either be miraculously completed or miserably abandoned. I am your host this week, Spike Kittrell, joined as always via the magic of the internet by Kyle Anderson and Richard Humphrey. This week's episode, of course, part two, covering 1982 sci-fi classic Blade Runner, The Final Cut. Boys, good to see you again.
It's good to be back in a place, man. On a podcast with such a good intro for every single episode. Yeah. Every episode ever.
That was some consistent. That was some real school assembly energy you gave that too.
Yeah, you realized
really powered through for the class.
I realized. Yeah, I have to have the energy of someone who's like got to tell you the new way to walk down the hallway. Like, we're all now going northeast.
So four podcasts that tells you the safety of guns.
One of four podcasts started that 1 week last year.
Yeah, one of four podcasts done by the same two people. I think last week we kind of ended, they're about to make this little like Blade Runner, right?
They're about to finish it up, but I think we have some housekeeping to do.
We do.
That we tasked our listeners with doing some digging for an episode that even now has not yet been released. In fact, Richard did the digging like 5 minutes after we stopped recording, and I was immediately vindicated for not being a weirdo imagining some shark ending to Blade Runner.
Now, I do want to say real quick that Spike was having an existential crisis that, like, on his podcast of his favorite episode, he ended it with this weird shark thing that he imagined.
No, yeah. It was like, when else is this going to be worth mentioning? So, Richard, yeah, you found something. What'd you find for us?
So I found a forum called BladeZone.com, which is basically a GeoCities website dedicated to everything Blade Runner, and hasn't been updated since 2017.
Start that bitch up again.
Right? Got something coming down the line.
Blade Zone died in 2049.
We could be the official podcast of Blade Zone, I'm pretty sure.
This is the most anyone's ever talked about Blade
Zone. Yeah, this is the most press.
And so what? So you found? I think I may have had it pulled up too.
It was a forum post in something called the Blade Runner Roundtable. It said regarding the possibility of Tyrell as a replicant.
This was my weird, potentially false memory, a la a unicorn running through the woods, that there was an ending to Blade Runner, written or even shot or, you know, conceptualized, where after killing Tyrell, and revealing that Tyrell is a replicant, Beatty goes upstairs and doesn't find some real Tyrell. They found the mind of Tyrell, put into a telepathic shark. Which, even saying it now, having some form of confirmation on this forum, is like, it still sounds like I just made that up.
Yeah, it sounds like a group of you made it up and started a website called Blade Zone.
No, I very well may have, like, I don't know, I must have obviously stumbled upon Blade Zone. Because you found this thing in the forum about that.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it again, because I left it up from a week ago, but...
Now, the moderators of Blade Zone.
Rutger Hauer. Harrison Ford.
Yeah, Harrison Ford is on there like, now listen, guys, you have to stay on topic. These threads are getting out of control.
We got to keep the brand alive, but don't get stupid.
Crazy. Has Harrison Ford ever liked that he was in a movie?
So in this documentary, and we'll get into the narration, sort of the biggest controversy of this movie. He said, like, upon seeing the director's cut with the narration removed, was the first time he ever had an enjoyable experience watching Blade Runner. So I think that he feels it. I think whatever he's doing, you can kind of smell it on press tours too, where like, for Blade Runner and even maybe The Force Awakens, like, he liked it and he liked the work. But I think that he'll only like a finished product as much as he liked the work on it.
I think he's aware of what he's working on when he's working on it, and then he walks away not giving a shit the moment he's offset. So he's like unaware of the impact something like he's in has. And it's just, at first it was cute when he was like a young hot guy in Hollywood, and now he's just sort of like grumpy Harrison Ford, and it's what you expect is for him not to give a shit that he was an Anchorman too. You know?
I mean, but at the same time, it's like he's just such an employee.
Yeah.
And he's a great employee, but you can tell that like this, he is at work, and whether he's at on Jimmy Kimmel or he's making, you know, like, you know, 42 or Star Wars, he's like at work and he's showing up and he's like, all right, what am I contracted to do? Okay, I'll do that as best I can. I don't think he phones things in. I don't think he's really necessarily.
No, I don't think he phones things in. It's just like, it's interesting to be an actor.
I think
that
he
has
phoned
like...
in Morning Glory.
No, he's okay, dialed well, in Morning Glory.
Your Morning Glories you're allowed to phone in, but like the guy has like three of
so
the
it makes
biggest...
him not phoning in so
he has three of the biggest pop culture characters like of all time. Right,
mm-hmm.
Like
Age of Adeline,
obviously.
Uh huh. He was in Anchorman 2.
Anchorman 2 is
as a remember a Day Moon is out. That makes me a werepanther.
Movie. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. So yeah, three of the biggest
Cowboys and Aliens.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's like, and
no,
then he's not. He's not seemingly ever like starstruck at the idea that he's these characters. You know what I mean? Like, you have sort of like your mm-hmm. Tom Holland's of the world that are like, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah. You're John Boyega's.
Like, yeah. Yeah. But it's like, it's interesting that he's sort of like always been like, yep, I guess I'm also Han Solo. Nerds.
But it's not the other side where he's like, but he's also not on the other side where he's like, but I'm a I don't want to be Han Solo. He seems to think, I think he right. knows it's cool, but it's like, he knows that the coolest way to be Han Solo is to not care about it, which contrasts so heavily with Mark Hamill, who's like,
who is a nerd.
I will be Luke. Yeah. Like, yeah. Who's a nerd and only has one of these,
but I also
the other
think
is a voiceover, you know,
the key difference is like, Harrison Ford took the money deal that they didn't take. and he got a lot of fuck you money early on, and a lot of them had to work a lot harder later on to like make it work career wise.
Well, I'm sorry, the others. You're not Harrison Ford. The other thing Harrison Ford has is that he's like a really, really great actor, and still is, and was when he first started acting. Like, I apologize that Mark Hamill has turned in like 3 great performances in his career. They're great, but like, Harrison Ford was a movie star. That, it's like the Family Guy joke, yeah, where he's like, he goes like, "I'm Han Solo and the only actor not ruined by this movie." It's like no one else survived out of Star Wars.
Yeah, it's a classic Friends situation.
Yeah, it's a classic Friend, and I think Harrison Ford would be the first to admit that he's in a classic Friends situation.
Yes,
he goes, "I'm clearly the Aniston of the pack."
Always saw myself as more of a Ross.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, yeah.
When I watch that show, I identify with Ross. When I look at my IMDb, I much more connect with Rachel.
I'm just imagining that scene from Last Jedi when Princess Leia is like floating through space, but it's Ross.
Explaining to Kylo that they were on a break.
Yeah. It's the moist maker, Kylo. The moist maker.
God damn.
Perfect. I'm having a margarita. We're talking about moist makers, folks.
Is you have a bottled margarita?
Mm-hmm. It's a Cayman Jack. A Cayman's Jack margarita.
That looks like you got it at a supermarket.
We get one episode recorded well, and we're already like, "What are you guys drinking?"
Hey, listeners, if you guys want to come hang out in the Development Hell Discord, we have a Discord now.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see these live and see them like 30 minutes shorter or 30 minutes longer than the release version. So, okay, wait, Richard, did you find this this forum thing?
So, the info is, I forgot that we were stalling for time.
Yeah, it's like half a sentence, all this buildup.
Yeah, it is half a sentence for David Peoples scripted that whole situation where he goes up to the next level and Tyrell's brain is frozen at Ridley's like request. But David wanted it to be a shark in the fish tank instead of a frozen brain. And so there is a version of the script that is the shark.
Which, if you think about that, in the context of that, is that David Peoples is brought in to replace Hampton Fancher as sort of like, Ridley's going crazy and we need someone who can handle that. And you would argue that that's where David Peoples started like snapping. And it's like, oh, there's a fucking fake Tyrell now? What if he's a fucking shark? Like, he's, I wonder if that was even a real pitch or if that was David Peoples cracking. And that was when Ridley like pulled out his cigar and was like, "He just pitched me a shark. We're ready to shoot." He had to break 2 writers to know that the movie's ready to go.
Yeah, you know how like Walt Disney has like always insisted that you Photoshop out any cigarette that's like in his hand? It's like the opposite of Ridley Scott. He's like, "Put more cigars in my hand."
If you watch this like 5-hour documentary, it's like it's nonstop. He was always like smoking cigars or cigarettes, or it's crazy. And everyone like tells stories like that where they're like, "Oh, I remember Ridley. He's got his Macanudo between the teeth, and he told me, 'Fuck you.'"
He looks so good for his age and smokes that many cigars. I'm starting to think there's some propaganda.
Yeah, tiny.
Well, so like Kyle said, they were just about making Blade Runner.
Just about Blade Runner there.
So a few other little technical mishaps are throughout, and a lot of these aren't even visible in the cut that we're watching and talking about. One was like, and this gets into sort of the different cuts of the movie. There's the big stunt where Zora, the exotic dancer with the snake, is killed and goes through all the plates of glass, through all the neon and the snow. And originally they were, it's like, this is where the production is starting to get so sped up. Producer Bud Yorkin is like on fuck.
It's another like
I did a yeah. I did a quick check to see if
Bjorken landed
with Kyle.
he's like an Icelandic folklore character.
No, he only dances. He produces through dance.
He does jigs.
He is basically on set like every day rushing Ridley. Ridley's taking too much time. These setups are going too long. Obviously, like anything that's a night shoot outside with rain and smoke and 100 extras carrying their own light umbrellas is going to take a second to set up. The other issue with Bud Yorkin is that he had only ever produced two movies that he hadn't directed. So he's kind of directing the movie, wants to be directing the movie. He's directing Ridley, like, why are you doing that? Which is not great for someone as already, even it's, you know, their third movie, someone as assured as Ridley Scott is not really going to have that.
I was going to say, that does not sound like how Ridley likes to play.
Nope. I told him, please tell me exactly what to do. So because of this, there's things that are getting rushed. One sort of famous issue with the original cuts of the movie, all the way up to the final cut, was that the woman Zora, the stunt woman, they didn't really have a hairpiece for her that worked. So they basically like had one red hairpiece, which was essentially like an afro, and they put this on her. The stunt woman is like visibly 15 years older than the actress and runs through in like four different shots. So this is an issue that's eventually fixed in the digital, all the digital work done for the final cut, where they actually replaced and digitally put the actress's face on this. But it was like this famous issue of like suddenly an old woman with very short curly hair is running through like in the most pivotal part of this movie so far, and then cuts back to this young, gorgeous actress.
That's so funny.
There are these stories now where the suits, this is basically Bud Yorkin and his people are coming in. Like every day, Ridley ignores them in the morning, they cut for lunch, and Ridley is taken in for a meeting with these suits. They come out, and Ridley is suddenly basically like asking for one take less. Like he's just trying.
Every morning I break all my bones, and every day I rip all my skin.
It's genuinely like, even though it's not necessarily that he's young, but at a young, with a young film career, he's still like really sticking to his guns and like, you've paid for a Ridley Scott movie. Why do you keep coming in and telling me how to make like a Bud Yorkin movie?
Bud Yorkin movie sounds like it's got horses.
Well, you also have to remember that, which this has horses, and maybe that was a note he listened to from Bud Yorkin, like put a horse in it.
Yeah, all the horses are Bud Yorkin's work.
Yeah, what's with the no horses? So another thing that hits production, it's basically like day-to-day issues. It's not your typical like Apocalypse Now where people are having heart attacks and stuff. It's like there's a lot of it comes from Ridley needing multiple takes and taking too long. So there's the stunt where Daryl Hannah's character does backflips and like tries to land on Deckard and hits the wall and starts shaking. And Ridley runs this female gymnast for like 20 minutes doing this backflip and she just gets fucking exhausted. So eventually the stunt coordinator, after lunch that day, like brings in this like top tier male gymnast who is huge, like a just jacked dude who does not look like Daryl Hannah. And he just goes full speed, basically getting paid per take, like under the table.
I get paid for flip.
And he's like going, this dude's going hard and he's in the movie. There are tons of shots in the movie at the end where Daryl Hannah's character is being played by male stunt doubles who like could handle 2 days of Ridley making them do a kick.
Rips.
So there are other things that are like just getting cut out of budget. Things like there's like Zora, the snake dancer. There was originally, this is another example of like something that would make David Peoples melt trying to write, which is that there was something that was originally going to be Zora's snake dance, where Zora started as a snake in the center of this mud pit that grew up and morphed into like this gorgeous dancer. And it was this heavily choreographed dance with the actress. And then they were like, this is the most expensive, insane fucking thing I've ever heard of. It was like effects that resemble I would imagine would have resembled like the liquid Terminator in T2, right, which was only possible like 15 years later.
But that exact scene is used in Fantastic Beasts 2 when Nagini is actually a woman.
Yeah, they saved it for Fantastic Beasts 2. It was probably what they figured on set. They were like, Ridley, don't
Warner's threw that in the back pocket.
Don't worry. Grindelwald's going to do those crimes.
Oh, man. Grindelwald
will
now
have
been played
by... We'll have J.K. Rowling pay for this fucking scene.
Grindelwald is eventually going to have been played by every man, right?
Yeah, he'll be like the KFC ads where they just cycle through the SNL.
Norm McDonald's going to be in the fourth one.
Norm McDonald's is Grindelwald.
Hey, Dumbledore. Why aren't we friends anymore, huh?
I'm saying here, Dementor, I mean, jeez.
Did you guys see that Lifetime movie that was like 15 minutes long where Mario Lopez plays like a hot guy who makes chicken at this house? And he's like Colonel Sanders.
No.
Yeah, no, KFC be wildin' with their marketing. They like came out with shoes. They've come out with like
I didn't know that.
Gaming console comes out
lotion.
In like 3 months.
Yeah, they're dropping a game system.
Wait, okay, so that's really like a KFC affiliated thing.
Yeah, probably. It's a they partnered with a website that does custom build PCs, and they're just making one that also can heat up chicken.
Finally.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like they're just trying to get people to tweet, you know.
Sure.
And it's working,
man. Well,
and you know what? You know all they need me to get to get me a tweet is keep making those fries. Making fries now. Only restaurant that sells good fries and gravy. You got my.
This episode has nothing but tangents ahead. Mm-hmm. So, but I got to add to it that like I've never had an experience at like a KFC or like at a drive-thru that wasn't like I felt like I upset somebody. Like, so I lived across the street from a KFC, so, you know, it was a good, nice neighborhood for like a year, and finally drove through, order me a buffalo chicken sandwich for some reason. It
that sounds like a terrible thing to order at KFC.
Oh, no, it was not the move. It was not the move. So, but here's the thing, is I get to the window, they give me the bag, and you know, the money has already happened. Typically, I'm allowed to leave. But she basically like shoves her fist back out her window and goes, "Give me that." I'm like,
"What?
The food that I own now?" So she's like, "Yeah." I give it to her. "Give me that" is the last thing she ever says to me. She goes in. Seconds later, she gives me the bag again. And I'm like, "Well, something just happened to this bag." And I look in, and clearly they had forgotten to put like buffalo sauce on it. But instead of like bringing the sandwich out, they kind of just dumped buffalo sauce into the bag. So it was mostly on like the wrapped sandwich. And so leading me to go across the street, go home and like undo the wrap and like smear my sandwich into the splatter.
So what we're saying is you can use our promo code DevHell at KFC for 50% off.
This has become, I've now told two horrific drive-through sandwich stories in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Oh my God.
Actually, I don't know if that's true. I think I will tell another story next week.
That's so awful.
Oh man. Well, so Ridley Scott, guys, he was not very well liked by the crew. I think any director that wants to do things and do things a lot and slowly maybe isn't.
You think Ridley Scott's
someone...
ever had a good time at a drive-thru?
I said I wanted chicken fries!
They spent 8 years developing chicken fries for him.
Yeah. They make proprietary chicken fry technology just for him.
You ask for Ridley Scott money. You want Ridley Scott money. You make fries that are chicken.
So at a certain point, there is this moment in the production called the T-shirt wars. That is the most petty shit you will ever hear in your fucking life.
We lost a lot of good men in the T-shirt wars.
Dude, they talk about it a lot of big dogs. Like that.
They reference it like so the Clone Wars is referenced in Star Wars.
You fought in the T-shirt wars?
Oh, you.
So the T-shirt wars are basically just, Ridley did some interview during the production and he was quoted saying that he preferred British crews over American crews. Now, Ridley Scott is British.
Oi, like, bruv.
He had just.
Y'all got crews there, bruv. Pretty good first idea, isn't it?
How are you starting on time over and right anyway?
Oi! Where's your crafty, mate?
God damn it.
Go and bring in the gym, mate! The gym! I'd prefer that too. That sounds way fucking better. You kidding me?
No, you probably get a lot more done.
Yeah.
So the crew hears about this, and like, on like this, like I don't know what this is. Like they just fucking couldn't stand it. I think he was already obviously getting on their nerves. But they did two things. One was they printed copies of that, like hundreds of copies of that article, and left them all over the set. Which like, don't.
Sorry, mate.
This isn't a great way.
We was reading the article 400 times.
Why did someone put it on a T-shirt?
We're too stupid to read this article so fast. And they also made a T-shirt that read, "Yes, Governor, my ass," which in 82 is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That sounds like something people in Nevada would put on their mask right now.
Yes, Governor, my ass.
So Ridley sees this and is like, I guess I don't understand this. But to my shock watching this documentary, it ends with another T-shirt being commissioned, which is Ridley makes a shirt that says xenophobia sucks. Another thing you'd see on a mask right now.
Yeah.
And it was literally, when I first heard, thought it might have been a reference to him having made Alien, like a little, like xenomorph.
Like a xenomorph thing?
But he was literally like, it's not cool to not like different cultures. And to, like, I don't know what this is, but they basically all just started wearing these shirts at each other.
The globally persecuted English.
He
wore a like I'm for both sides shirt in the middle of a war between people working on a movie.
Over, like,
I know it'll solve it.
That he started.
Shirt. Yeah.
This is like if you fucking bombed Pearl Harbor and then you were just like, look, we all hate violence and war.
Look, we don't like explosions near waves. We can all agree with that. You're like, what?
If there's one thing we don't like, it's Pearl Harbor stuff.
Yeah, how about we give you a cherry blossom?
Basically, like, everyone just started wearing these shirts at each other. There's I don't know why you include... The only reason this would be included in this big documentary is if enough of the crew were talking about it.
You know what it is? You know what it is, Spike? Is,
what is
that
it,
at that time, shirts were memes.
That was the only, like, that whoa, a reference to things.
You couldn't post a meme, but, like the Don't Tread on Me shirt was, like, dumb Republican meme proto.
Sure.
And
I guess that makes sense, too, of, like, you're on a set, there's not much other things to...
I'm
like
with stupid.
Other means of big ideas and discourse.
You know, one of these shitty dudes has like a screen predict thing in the back of his truck because he rolls with the dead or something. So he just starts banging these out in the parking lot for 10 apiece. And everybody's like, yeah, I'll do
hell yeah.
That.
Well, you know, the costume department just has a screen printer because they want to make as many different T-shirts as possible in the backgrounds at all times. So they're just using company money to be petty.
You know Harrison Ford was offered both of these shirts.
You know he has both of those shirts and then just gave them away as like because he didn't care. Like he just used it to like wash his car. Yeah.
How do you not put on the xenophobia sock shirt? I feel like that's a shirt that you get backed into the corner with. Because to not put it on, if there's like eight people wearing xenophobia sock shirts and then you're just holding one.
Guys, let's make that the first Dev Hell merch. Is just xenophobia sucks shirts.
Xenophobia sucks my ass.
My ass.
Do you think that there was like a bunch of little people on the J.F. Sebastian set wearing really big baggy yes, governor, my ass shirts?
Sorry, the only printed larges and above. Sorry.
It's just like draped back like a...
They look like a little kid wearing their Cinderella shirt at nighttime.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be a night. It'll be a sleep shirt.
Be a sleep shirt for the little Napoleon bear.
Yeah. The camera turns to a bear in a t-shirt that says "We Governor."
We Governor.
Oh my god.
Mandaria.
So, a list starts up that's basically of crew members that quit. Like, it becomes a real problem where people are just like, fuck these long hours, fuck how long this is going over everything, you know? And again, Ridley's just like, he comes from commercials too, which are sort of a get it done fast, big ideas thing. So you can imagine he's like been validated by Alien, and he's just like, I'm making my crazy person movie. I can imagine a director in this setting is like, this might be my apocalypse now. I need to just keep going. There was no point in being crazy with my writer a year ago if I'm not going to be crazy on this set now.
Right.
Like, why would I? He kind of can't go back on this. He has to just keep going and keep going big.
Imagine sitting through 300 fucking meetings about the umbrella design and then someone being like, should we rein this in? And you're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Rein this in. Yeah. I've spent the last year and a half trying to rein this out, bitch.
Look, guys, I just looked it up. A little known fact, there was also an umbrella that said xenophobia sucks.
That's a cool umbrella. If you asked me what's another thing that had that printed on it, I wouldn't have said umbrella. That's typically something no one can see. What is, you're holding it above everyone's head.
Mm-hmm. But God can see it.
That's true. The shark god can see it.
Shark.
So,
it's the only god I recognize.
So now we're at the last day of production, which was apparently 27 hours.
That's that day.
By definition, not a day of production.
Yeah.
But basically, like, they showed up on set, they didn't leave for 27 hours, and this is because, like, technically, it's like, we have budgeted for one more day. And with the way they shot, it was like their days lasted until the sun came up. Their last day of production was on the roof. It was Beatty's famous death scene.
The famous shark scene?
Yeah, it's this famous scene.
I think it's really fucked up that they took that role away from all the like able shark actors in Hollywood that are going to crush that.
Yeah,
Finding Nemo shark.
Well, it was the 80s. Things are different now. They make, you know, we've got the Meg. We've got, we made Finding Dory.
Shark Tale.
Yeah, we've done a lot. We've done our part.
Water.
Yeah, I know.
47 meters below. 47 meters below two.
Some movie where there's a lake and it's like a freshwater shark, but I can't remember the name of it.
There's Lake Placid the crocodile.
And then there's like the Sharknado and all the ones where it's like shark versus like lobster zombie and stuff like
shark,
that.
Shark.
Do y'all know about Lavalantula? Yeah.
I do now.
Avalanche of lava.
I only listened to Lavalantula's first EP, but it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Of lava.
They're tarantula? Mostly producing now. So on the roof is the famous scene, the famous monologue. According to Rutger Hauer, who seems like the guy who just shows another kind of like Anglo-European, like Harrison Ford, like shows up, does work, don't complain, it sucks, but let's move on kind of guy. And he also was like really pushing Ridley in terms of bringing his own ideas. I think he was a good match for Ridley in terms of like, what if I thought of crazy shit too? And things like that were like, oh, your stuntman could barely jump from roof to roof. And that's why now we have Deckard like hanging off the roof. What if you roll the set closer and then I can do the whole jump? Now that's a cool idea, but it now forces like Ridley's hand in terms of like slowing down the production even more. So they do that. It's great. Another thing is he's just like, I grabbed a dove and I think I should hold a dove this whole time. And then like when I die, I let go of the dove. I think there were just, it's one of those sets where there's just doves around.
So he's just making the movie way better.
Yeah. It's
like, hey, what if this scene was good?
Well, like, even to that point, Rutger Hauer also famously rewrote that entire speech where like overnight he was looking at the script and it's like this. And if you look at this documentary, it shows you a little bit of the original speech and it is fucking terrible. And he describes it as just like generic sci-fi stuff that means nothing. And you watch him do it and he's literally like, love, sex, all these things you take for granted, like just dying robot stuff.
Yeah.
And so he writes a few of these lines and then he eventually writes like the morning of all those memories lost, like Tears and Rain, and brings it, everyone loves it, he gives the thing, and
it's crazy, they saved the original speech for Grindelwald's speech at the end of Fantastic Beasts 2, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Does he have a great speech?
It would have been really funny if at the end, he pitches this whole thing and he, like, really brings it in the room when he's pitching it, like, the rereading it. He's like, look, Tears and Rain. And then just, like, this is if they had gotten a British crew. They just would have been like, oi, bruv! Pretty gay, mate!
Is he gonna do the script or we gotta live with that?
Why'd you talk about a dove, mate? We don't got any doves, mate.
This movie's about a bear and his friend. This guy ain't even been in the movie. Thinks he knows how it should end. He thinks he knows what he should say at the end.
Yes. His castle wants us to move to fucking set so he can fucking jump. I say, you get to fucking jump it further, mate.
He slows down the day 2 hours and then he says a bunch of shit no one ever wrote.
Bunch of fucking shit even on the fucking page, mate.
Christ, I don't know how we can leave. What do we got? Only 24 more hours to the day. Okay.
Yeah, at least it's only 26 more hours in the workday, mate.
Luckily in England, days are 27 hours long. This all became Australian.
Yeah. Listen, mate, we didn't see the Africa filming here, mate.
I stayed out of this because my British accent is so bad.
I'm going to eventually start doing a good French accent.
That's your mission.
That's where it accidentally comes in. So eventually while they're shooting the scene, the sun comes up, which just means like we're done. And the suits are like this. Yeah, you can smell the donuts getting made. You're done. You're wrapped up. But basically the suits, like Tears in Rain.
Rock-a-doodle.
Oi, you think, what, did you hear that?
Oi, mate, I'm starting to think maybe he said the dove, he should be holding a rooster, mate.
Hey, hold for rooster.
Hold for rooster, mate. We're going to catch one, mate. We've been trying to running around trying to catch one of these fast little fuckers all day, mate.
Rocker says a rooster can't fly, but we've made a bunch of other weird shit in this movie. We could make it fly.
Oi, mate, what if the rooster's gone, mate? Cheeky little guard rooster, mate.
What if Tyrell's a chicken? And Ridley's just like, I love having this energy on set.
Yeah, Ridley can't get fucking enough.
That's how Chicken Run was made.
So when
Chicken Run,
Chicken Run, the most famously British movie ever made.
Chicken Run, Crimes of Grindelwald, Blade Runner, shared universe.
Starring Mads Mikkelsen.
This is my Screencraft article.
So when the sun comes up,
Chicken
the suits
Run is
like, yay,
movie.
We get to... No. So when the sun comes up, the suits are happy that they get to just, like, shut down the movie. They've, like, been waiting to say, yay, we're not making Blade Runner anymore.
They want to close down Animal House.
100%. And it's like, but the thing is that Ridley's not done. They haven't gotten what they need. And this is obviously, like, the most important and, in retrospect, like, the best scene in the movie. And they basically take chainsaws to the set, like, basically cut everything off of the roofs of these sets and bring them into the soundstage and reset all the lighting and get their last shots inside. And that's what sort of made it like a double or triple shooting day. But basically, they were wrapped and everything. They got everything that Ridley wanted. Despite the sort of micromanaging of Bud Yorkin, of course. And the very next day, as they're breaking down sets and starting to go into production, everybody on payroll gets a letter from Bud Yorkin's company and lawyers effectively firing everybody, including Ridley Scott. They basically exercise their rights to finish the movie, with Bud Yorkin wanting changes and removals and huge changes basically to what has been shot.
More like not your Bud Yorkin.
Yeah, not a good Bud Yorkin. So this is a great place to go into some things that Kyle and Richard have found on Blade Zone.
Okay, I found this sort of Buck Wild 2049 fan fiction. This was written in 2018 by Godslayer.
For an empty chat room, basically, because I thought this thing was dead. Is this not on Blade Zone?
That one's not on Blade Zone because no. Blade Zone is very specific with their fan fiction in that it cannot be slash fiction or cross with any other universe.
Slash fiction being when they have sex.
Yeah. Okay. And also like...
When the characters make love.
No, slash fiction is when it's like Marvel meets Star Wars, or like, you know, Winnie the Pooh and Twilight. Okay. Yeah.
What was the second one you just said out loud?
Winnie the Pooh and Twilight.
All right. Well, I mean, we got to find that, right?
Oh, Father Bella. Your hands are ice cold.
Say
C-U-L-L-E-N.
Say it. Ticker.
You're a ticker. Okay.
The Volturi are just heffalumps and woozles.
There's three stories.
All right, so I just want to read some excerpts from this fan fiction just because I think it's kind of fun. So this is 1 month since Kay got shot by Love. The memory of Deckard saving Kay from a snowy rooftop was seared into his head. The memory had to be real, not implanted. It was very real and haunted him every day. Deckard picked up the bleeding Kay from outside the memory workshop and placed him into the spinner, injuring his old man back in the process.
Fucking rude.
Kay was bleeding, but it was nothing some bandages and a good bit of rubbing alcohol couldn't fix. He still had to abandon the Wallace Corporation and get away. Now, here Kay was, sitting in his new apartment watching The Simpsons reruns on Fox. In between the time...
What?
In between the run time was the ever-present commercials. Pretty typical. Coke ads, insurance, VersaLife products, Cyberpunk Walmart sales... The new Joy selections. God, Kay. Miss Joy. Love not only tried and failed to kill him, but she did kill his beautiful e-girl. The sweet, sweet intercourse with the fusion of Marlette, the prostitute, and Joy really fucked with Kay's head. Now he felt more of a need for not only joy, but for sex, in all caps. Kay might be an artificial man, but his manliness sure has sentience. Something needed.
Oh, no. Sentient manliness.
So he's going to go buy a new one. He goes to a shop, and the person at the shop does say my favorite line, which is,
your I just want to say, cost.
Yeah.
Wait, what does he say?
It's, your e-girl costs $15,000. This okay?
That cool? That going to work?
That cool?
I just want to say that sentient, when, like, at the before we decided on toxic masculinity, sentient manliness was also considered.
It was on the table. Yeah, it was on the whiteboard.
Honestly, I'm going to start using it.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, that's just my sentient manliness.
I don't know if this is me trying to control things, if I'm being sort of like having sentient manliness.
She handed him the emanator, and Kay was on his merry way back home. Back at home, Kay plugged the emanator into the wall, allowing E-girl to transition into house waifu. And then parenthesis starts, no. And it says, shut the fuck up, autocorrect. Waifu is a word, you goddamn mongoloid. Close parenthesis. Oh, also, there was a line when he was buying the thing that said, you and lots of luck. Your joy model saved herself on a SanDisk flash drive we found in your apartment in L.A., and she also uploaded herself to Google Drive. Kind of like the fun world building with the Google Drive in there.
yeah.
So he, you goddamn mongoloid. Joy projected herself in front of Kay and did that gay shit where she spins around.
wait, I didn't hear what you said. After did that gay shit.
That's some real sentient manliness.
Yeah.
Joy,
what did
Joy
you just
projected
say?
Herself in front of Kay and did that gay shit where she spins around because, and in quotes, whoa, dude, I'm able to walk, like in the movie.
So, like, this guy is offering some, like, criticism of the movie, too.
Like, criticism, but decided this was the world he wanted to play in.
No, yeah, he's in the theater and he's like, that's some gay shit, but I still like my idea.
Kay's eyes lit up as he sprung forward, attempting to hug the holographic XX chromosome being.
No.
This is very incel written. She's not real, so the machine man dived directly into the floor with a large thud, leaving a hole in the ground into the apartment underneath due to his enhanced strength. Sorry, Kay whispered to the angry Italian man residing underneath his building.
That's awesome.
Pulling his head out of the floor, Kay couldn't wait to talk to Joy. I'm so happy we're together, he mumbled. I am too, she responded. Before they could say any more, a volley of bangs slammed against the door. Cautiously, Kay removed his pistol from his fucking sick jacket.
It says that?
Who are you? It says removed his pistol from his fucking sick jacket.
Ugh.
Who are you, and why are you at my apartment? He questioned while positioning the gun toward the door. Silence. After 5 seconds was a reply. I'm from Utico. Or Unetco? Unatco? Unatco.
One of those.
I'm here to help you. The disembodied voice firmly stated. Unatco? Why would Unatco want anything to do with me? Maybe he wasn't real. Maybe it could be a Wallace plant sent to kill me. I can't afford to lose Joy again. 100K. The synthetic man moved closer to the door and opened the slit into the hallway. Before him was a fairly beefy man with black hair and dark sunglasses. More concerning was a series of blue lines embedded into the left side of his skull. He looked to be the real deal. Kay hesitantly turned the knob, allowing the strange man inside his abode. I mean,
that's pretty awesome.
He
apart from that
later
gay
say,
shit.
Kay simply nodded yes. They were onto him. Kay placed his pistol back into his super stylish leather jacket and turned to face Joy.
This is like he's this really... guy's main takeaway was that jacket.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad gay dancing cool.
It also
jacket.
Like, and we haven't talked much about 2049, but like assuming people have seen that too. This is like under the idea that the events of Well, doesn't he die in 2049?
Okay, hold on. This is great. I skipped forward a little bit.
This is his, like,
Joe
dream.
Joe gave an exacerbated glance at House Waifu, who was smiling from digital ear to digital ear. She began walking into the bedroom as well. This was it. I guess it was going to happen now of all times. Yes. He really wanted to pound the woman again and pretend that that was it. But I guess this was the next best thing. Here we go. Kay picked his head up, removed his epic fur-lined jacket, and walked into the bedroom.
God damn.
So,
it's the straightest
JC
shit I've
ever heard. Who came to the door. The guy who came to the door and him are going to run a train on Joy. So he comes into the room and Kay says, first things first, no homo. Ugh. I'm a proud straight man and you can't take that away from me.
This is a kind of person I didn't know wrote fan fiction.
I don't know. I know I don't have a soul, but that doesn't mean I have no dignity. Jesus.
Oh my God. Christ. Why are we reading this?
Oh my God.
That took a turn
Okay, well, I think that's enough.
Wait, what? Speaking of things Kyle only read the first two lines of.
The last line of this script. Oh my God, he fucking shoots the dude in the head during the threesome.
He tries some homo shit. I want to share something I just found, which is Winnie the Pooh and the Sex Vampires. It is. Oh no, I thought I was looking at the whole thing, but this has three chapters. I'll read you the first chapter.
Do you want me to read my thing while you look over that?
I've got it ready for you, and I want to close with another Blade Runner, because we got to get back into Blade Runner. Alright. Winnie the Pooh was standing in the 100-yard woods, waiting for his friend Christopher 100 Robin.
100-yard?
I know, that's new. Maybe for,
This person doesn't even know the lore.
I think maybe, copyright. You never know if this is going to get optioned. It should be noted that this person's name is Doomsday Jesus, and their avatar is Oscar Wilde. That just, I feel like, is worth noting. The lights above him blinked, and the moon was shining. Full as usual, it had been ever since the invasion of sex vampires. Then he saw something strange. It was this.
Then the Fire Nation attacked.
Now this does posit the interesting notion of we never see an invasion into the 100-acre woods, but sort of
or
like
the 100-yard woods.
How militarized, Eeyore could get? Notice.
Tigger can't mobilize.
I always say they can have the Blue Angels, ready with attack guns in 8 hours or something. How fast could we get Rue an Uzi?
A Roozy? Fuck. Then he saw something strange. It was scary in a sort of odd, shiny way.
Kanga with a maze.
It was definitely not a heffalump. It was a sex vampire.
No!
Winnie the Pooh froze in terror. This wasn't the way he had expected to lose his virginity.
Oh, Bob.
That is quite the leap.
That is a line where it is like, this is not the way he expected to lose his virginity.
Because it's like, do you ever walk down the street and you see a stranger and you're like, well, I'm about to have sex.
Hey, that's some real sentient manliness if I've ever heard it.
Seriously.
The sex vampire landed before Winnie and stared him right into his eyes for then to speak.
He has the voice of one of the what we do in the shadows people.
Let me introduce myself. The vampire spoke in a calm yet distant voice. He was glistening with innuendo and syphilis. I am Edward Cullen,
I'm
going
Miller.
To rape you till the cows come home. Oh my God, guys. Yeah, I'm sorry.
This was played by TJ Miller, for sure.
I mean, we got four more lines. We either cut this or we finish this.
Written by T.J. Miller while Jordan Folk.
Winnie the Pooh knows it.
Hey, just power through a T.J. What?
Winnie the Pooh noticed that the fear was suddenly replaced by perplexion.
Do you know when they are going to come home?
He asked, stuttering. Edward's grin was now stretching to the point of explosion danger. Light enough, he said, unzipping his trousers. And the other two chapters are called interludes.
You know what's hot? Winnie doesn't even have to unzip his trousers. Doesn't have any.
Oh, you know what? That is the end of the story. And the rest is him responding
to the mountains
comments. Yeah.
What's his take?
Okay, I'm going to just read this. I'm going to read it in full. You ready?
Yeah.
It is time to reply to some reviews publicly. For this, I interrupt the story of Winnie the Pooh and sex vampires. This future colon 97 wrote, this story, one, proves that you have no life. Two, you have a sick, sick mind. Three, you have entirely too much time on your hands. And four, I never want to meet you. Jesus.
Okay. Okay, here's the thing, right? That's a mean comment.
Oh, that's, don't throw that out.
Four out of 4 points with that on that comment.
Oh, batting 1,000, future colon 97.
I don't want to know this person. They do have too much time on their hands.
Do you guys think that...
it's like, either you write this online or you kill your cousin and cover it up, you know? So it's like, you gotta do one or the other.
Do you guys think that when Winnie the Pooh eats ass, he just sticks his hand up someone's butt and then pulls it out and licks the sides?
I don't think that. I've read those fan theories, but
out here, Christopher robbing me of my innocence.
This used to be about stuff, this show.
This used to be a show about a community college.
Oh, man. All right, Richard, you found some. I can't believe I'm encouraging more fan fiction, but Richard, you found some.
All three of these have been awful.
Oh, man.
I found a fan fiction. A lot of the ones for Blade Runner are actually about 2049, because I guess people who write fiction online love the relationship between a hologram woman and a robot.
It just works for them.
Yeah, that's a. So this one is called...
Whereas one about potential robot and robot doesn't quite work for them.
Yeah. So this one is called Tears of Rain. And...
There's got to be like 60 Tears in Rains.
And it says, Ben knows that Kira isn't real, but her product tagline was, everything you want to see, everything you want to hear.
I thought you were
going
to say what that pussy is.
Jesus. Thought I had an ally in this.
And that was all it took for him to buy her.
And now you don't.
So essentially, this is if Blade Runner technology was like in Star Wars. And so Ben is Kylo, obviously, and he bought a Joy, and it's Rey. And here, I'll read a little bit. Ben already told himself that today would be the day that he would turn the emanator on, but first breakfast. He brushed his teeth, changed into a black turtleneck sweater with black pants, and walked to the kitchen. After turning the stove on, he makes his daily eggs with bacon and sits down on his chair and begins to eat.
Kylo makes eggs with bacon daily. Kylo, waking up. Well, I do have to figure out where Luke is in the galaxy, but first breakfast.
My favorite thing is that, like, Expressly always talks about it, like, three times it talks about his black pants, because it knows that he has to wear them up to his nipples.
That's his whole sexuality, is the black pants, right?
Yeah.
Same.
He feels as if the emanator is looking at him, almost if it's teasing him, saying, "You're afraid." He continued eating while suddenly the emanator button beeped and had a red glow around it. been surprised that he...
The Emanator is horny. You better hurry up.
Ben surprised that he got out of his seat, his food already forgotten. A holographic menu popped up. Snoke Corporation welcomes Kira. We hope you...
Snoke Corporation!
We hope you enjoy this project, a robotic voice said. But how is that possible? How did it turn itself on? It then showed descriptions of how one would want Kira to look like. It had a variety of different skin colors to eye color, face shape, hair, height, accents, and many more. Ben, still surprised at how the item can just do that, didn't care about how he wanted her to look like, so he chose the original avatar of the girl with the brown hair, hazel eyes, and a smile that could brighten the darkest of rooms. A smile that
Hell
was
yeah,
so
dude. I want one of these, but I want the girl to just look like Rogue the Bat from Sonic the Hedgehog, dude.
Yeah.
That'd fucking rip.
There's like a thing every episode that I know you make up.
Rogue the Bat. Make Rogue the Bat real from Sonic so I can marry her. Make Rogue the Bat from Sonic real so I can marry her!
After putting in the language he wanted, the Emanator had at 90% on, meaning it was almost done with the profile. All it took was the name he would choose for Kara to say. Ben, he said out loud. Congratulations, Ben. We welcome you to Kira, the same robotic voice said. A page shows up loading. A young woman suddenly appeared with her hair half up, half down. She looks at her surroundings, looking curious. She looks at Ben's face and says her first words. Hello, Ben. What a handsome man you are. She had a deep, rich voice paired with an accent that he thought only existed in those old films you would watch sometimes. She had almost...
Those old fucking... Star Wars films?
Yeah, Force Awakens. She had almost no makeup on her face except for a dark red shade of lipstick on her lips. She was wearing the same bikini-style outfit that Snoke showed at the meeting. Would you mind changing into something else? Ben asked softly.
One of Snoke's classic bikini meetings that he does in the movies.
It's a bit drafty in here, but let's talk about things.
I'm just saying, Rogue the Bat kind of wears a bikini. Make a real
No, that's not a connection. That's just another thing.
And so Ben asks, do you mind changing into something else? Kira looked down at her outfit. Is this better? She smiled. Her clothes suddenly glitched into a green dress, still wearing the same armband around her right arm with black high heels on. Yes. Ben found that he liked green on her. It reminded him of nature that was once on this Earth. You know, Earth, the planet he's from.
I didn't realize what was going on with Rogue the Bat, and I just looked it up.
Make Rogue the Bat real from Sonic so I can marry her!
Continue, Richard.
Actually, down there it just gets boring sex stuff. You guys want to hear the Snoke meeting?
Yeah.
I mean, if ever there's been two guys that want to get through the boring sex stuff to the Snoke meeting.
Right? A memory jolting his mind of a little girl with three buns in her hair and freckles, the orphanage. Advertised as the perfect companion showed a young woman with brown hair up in three buns, hazel eyes, and freckles across her face. It showed different pictures of her with different types of clothing, each becoming less innocent than the other. The last picture showed caught everyone's attention at the meeting. She had one hand on her head and her other index finger in her mouth, showing a seductive look. She was shown wearing a sparkly choker with a red bra, her midriff showing a band on her upper right arm, and what looked like a long red veil of a skirt that only covered the front and back.
That's fucking Rogue the Bat, dude! You're fucking with me now! That is fucking frame perfect!
That's why I
Rogue the Bat,
baby! Ben almost didn't catch when Snoke said, Kira will be more than just a companion. The truth is, gentlemen will be she would be used as a sexual product.
All right, so we're close to where this has to be done.
Everyone in the meeting whistled, talking loud over one another. Snoke smirked when he got the reaction he wanted. And for the lonely person, they will definitely feel something. Snoke smiled creepily.
Snoke's such a pervert. Holy shit. Snoke's a little fucking pedo-y pervert. Snoke had his little dick on.
This is the Snoke I wanted to see.
Yeah, this is the Snoke the fans.
Snoke has one really long, thin dick.
This is, if you think about quite the Snoke theory.
People just like in like the same type of meeting Tim Allen was in about the total tank in Santa Claus, just but like Snoke is like 18 feet tall.
What does that dick look like? There's so many options for Snoke's dick to look like. So many dicks could go with his body. It's really insane.
That's the little paragraph in the Art of book from like J.J. Abrams. His dick could be anything.
I like to imagine Greedo's nose.
Yeah. Andy and I had a lot of discussions about Snoke's dick.
Yeah.
We ended up taking the decision all the way back to Lucas himself, and one of the only times we've gone to him after the Disney.
Yeah, we set up a lot of stuff about Snoke's dick that Rian Johnson was not interested in.
Yeah, Rian Johnson just saw all the penis stuff and was like, I'm just going to cut this guy in half. I can't deal with that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not ready.
If you were like, dick. Wait, if I
we
don't
need a whole movie just for this.
If I don't kill him, you guys are going to do 9 all about his dick? I guess he's dead. I guess he's got to go. Well, those were wonderful, guys.
So, listeners, I implore you, go into our reviews, leave a 5-star review, and find your favorite fanfic of Blade Runner, and we'll read it on air.
Yeah, film fans.
Yeah, we'll read it on air if it's enough five-star review. Sorry, I really petered out halfway.
You're like an uncle at Christmas.
Yeah, that was pretty scary. I've never seen someone like die mid-sentence.
Yeah, you have one gas station margarita, and you think you can just talk like that now?
Yeah.
Guys, and I'm not even...
Looking at it as if... I keep thinking you started another one. Like, I don't see any progress. It's also...
I've been adding...
Also, yeah, that's what I was going to say. People are not imagining a, like dull orange bottle, which is what Kyle is drinking out of.
Munch.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's like a Snapple
bottle.
Every time
you mention it, he drinks, so... Yeah, it looks like he's just drinking Snapple. Yeah. So, guys, Ridley Scott has been fired from Blade Runner. The documentary and nothing I can find is clear. It just seems like Ridley, like, muscled his way back in. It was kind of like, similar to what we talked about, like, why do you think anyone else can finish this at this point?
That's why you
you'd have to have somebody else sit through 2 more years.
Well, that's why you bring in Ron Howard.
Just to get caught up.
Well, that's the thing, is there's just no Ron Howard to like, it's too crazy. It's been finished. It's chaos.
There's no
and you find out even Ridley had to, do stuff to like finish, like add to the movie, finish the movie and make it work.
Well, it's like, it's just proof that like, there was no studio yes men at the time that like, you know, the system hadn't really built and hammered out, like, and told everyone, this is kind of what we want directors to be doing, and, like, this is the kind of bidding we want. And
well, and there's also that sort of thing that comes up a lot, is that they're trying to make Star Wars again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think pretty quickly it's like, well, there's just no Star Wars to be had here anymore.
And judging by the fanfic, yes, there is.
There clearly is. I mean, there was just not enough Snoke, there was not enough Rogue the Bat.
Make her real.
Hey, we all got a weird cartoon we want to fuck. Am I right, though?
Oh, my God. We have so much more to talk about. But
hey, what weird cartoon do you want to fuck, Spike?
On the first screening, Ridley Scott, back on the movie, has basically...
I'd fuck Timmy Turner's mom.
Saying, yeah, no, we all would. Well, because you're just not a face person.
Yeah.
Don't we never see their faces?
No, we see their faces.
I think in the first episode, we don't see the faces.
It's Cow and Chicken, we don't see the faces.
I think there's something to unpack there with you. Next week,
yeah, Dex,
tune in. I guess 2 weeks from now, one of us will have found some Dex, some cartoon fanfic from our
favorite moms,
kid mom crushes. Yeah, it all ends up just being moms, I guess.
Is it fun?
It's all around. It's all right next to the video you're actually watching.
Yeah, I have 32 tabs of it open right now.
Guys, do my homework for me.
Yeah, for an episode that will release 2 weeks before, like, none of this is in order anymore.
They don't need
to
know.
Ridley on the first screening said, I think it's marvelous. What the fuck does it mean? So, like, even, which I think is the kind of attitude he had the whole time of, like, oh, I made a mess. Who would have thought?
And yeah, that's sort of how the government felt after they made 9/11 happen.
But I think that, I mean, that's just sort of the reaction to a first cut, you know, is it's like, I like it. This is a mess. Hampton Fancher saw it, and, you know, Hampton Fancher at that point had just been rewritten by David Peoples, and Sutton was, like, horrified, said, you ruined it, said, I told you so on this and this and this, and it, like, bummed out Ridley. David Peoples said that, like, this is really, really gotten out of hand, which shows you that...
Was there voiceover on this?
No, there was no voiceover in the script. So that comes pretty soon here.
Wait, so the shark was talking?
No, the shark, you're thinking of... don't stop talking about the shark now. Why did I
bring is your opinion that they maybe do you think they ever shot any shark related stuff, or do you think they were on such a time crunch that they didn't have time to like shoot alternate shark?
I would imagine that like if you barely have the time to shoot the most important scene in the movie, you probably can't be making Shark Tank phone calls.
Well, you 100% don't have time to make the most important scene in the movie because the shark scene is the most important scene in the movie and you didn't have time
right,
to make
I know.
It.
I guess...
I was going to say, try telling him that that's not the most important scene.
I mean, that this is Napoleon Bear erasure that I will not stand for.
Oh, I am back. ever since I was a cub, Spike has been sticking up for me.
Make the bath real.
Make the bath real.
David Peoples agreed that the movie was a mess and said that there was a 3-page scene that was now 14 minutes long. So, like, here's an example of like how Ridley was just extrapolating on every other creative person's ideas, and it didn't even stop. So he's already starting to do camera tests on Legend. So they're doing camera tests on Legend with, like, horses and shit in the woods. Oh, and he's horses, like, make this horse a unicorn. And they're like, why? And he's like, for Blade Runner. And they're like, why? And he's like, I don't know yet. And they just shoot a bunch of unicorn footage and bring it back. And he's like, I have what's going to fix Blade Runner. It's all this unicorn footage. Which, like, if you can imagine, if you can separate it from it, what you've seen, it's insane to be like, what this needs is the main character dreaming about a unicorn.
I would look into purchasing a firearm to, like, approach Ridley in the parking lot after work and be like, you must.
So, but he cuts it in, and this is the moments of, like, I think he's such a brilliant director in post. You see that in sort of the obvious cases of like Gladiator and All the Money in the World. But this too, where he really figures out what a movie is once she's watching it constructed. And the unicorn is so brilliantly worked into his dream and the like kind of lyrical nature of the movie. And it really works. This is obviously something that gets cut out of like the theatrical cuts and stuff.
They're like, seriously, guys, cut it out.
Yeah, exactly. They laugh, they watch the hair, they say, you got it, dude. They do all the stuff. And they...
How rude.
That show had more catchphrases than, like, any other fucking show. Like, per capita, right?
It definitely had, like, as many catchphrases as, like, Geico has spokespeople.
Right. Or KFC has...
has Colonels, yeah.
Kyle, you left for 30 seconds, and we're trying to figure out how many catchphrases Full House had.
Oh man, there was
you got it, dude.
There was that's too much, man. That Stephanie would say.
What?
No. The one daughter Stephanie would go, that's too much, man. No. Right?
There's you got it, dude.
I know the mom of the twins. The twins would both say fat and sex.
Okay. No, wait until you can speak, Kyle.
DJ had Oh My Lanta.
Yep. That's a real one, Kyle. You did that one.
Bob Saget had the one where he would make the news.
When he would make the news.
News. And he would say there's a little person hanging in the background of every episode. And he would look into the camera.
Where did this just go?
Is there a little person in a well?
This show is sponsored by whatever Kyle has been drinking.
Yeah, whatever Kyle's had three sips of has really got him lit.
Orange Fanta margaritas. Thank you for the support.
Is that Orangina? That French orange drink?
Oh my god. Guys, listen. They shot the unicorn. It's great. But all the stuff that's like abstract and weird about the movie got cut by like the people who did have contractual power to cut down Ridley's movie.
Sounds like the biggest cut was the crew and cast.
Heyo.
Hey, put that in the other news thing.
So the first test screenings in America resulted in audiences like confusion about the plot and the world and the characters. And they did see something that kind of resembled the final cut.
So do you think that, like...
You're in big trouble, mister.
Do you think...
I saw you Googling something. God damn.
Do you think this was like the start of studios thinking maybe we do need to show the science behind things and explain more?
Like, I think it's like, it might have been just this convergence of like sci-fi not being taken seriously as a
genre.
As a genre, so there were still art films being made in the genre. But like in the post Star Wars thing, it's like, well, now we got to find a medium. We got to find what we do. Here's this guy that made like this intense sci-fi horror movie. I think they're just like, they don't know. They don't want to stand by like pure art with something that cost this much, took this much effort on everybody's part. I mean, t-shirts were printed, Richard. You have to make sure this thing
when it
turns. So you're saying it was
it's
like
really
the
just
Joker.
Because everything about sci-fi is you can't like fact check somebody on what things go on with science fiction in the future, and so you can't really tell somebody their imagination is factually wrong. And I feel like that's where a lot of it is like got when Ridley Scott's making Gladiator, they can be like, no, Rome didn't look like that,
right?
You know, but like
things that are sort of purely imagined.
Yeah, he's unhinged, you know?
Yeah. And they're sort of like, they are sort of up for debate.
You know, and it's like with Alien, he got one ship to design and the rest of the world was just black space, you know?
Right. And this is two movies in a row where he partners with like a singular artistic like painter to design his movies with H.R. Giger and Sid Mead. Like, he's not doing this the right way. He's not like bringing in the studio guy who has like knows exactly how it should look like Star Wars but cooler, or Star Wars but gritty. You know, he's bringing in like industrial painters and like H.R. Giger, who's basically like, how can I make it a vagina or a penis?
Yeah, he's like bringing in people he like smokes weed with, basically.
Yeah, no, he's bringing in his like, yeah, his, like, the people he trips with. So Bud Yorkin, our old friend,
not my bud,
narration. So, but he suggests narration which is the obvious sort of quick, like, how do we explain the things? We do it with narration. Ridley in this documentary also claims he did it. I don't know why they're fighting for this credit. Maybe Ridley just doesn't want to admit that somebody told him what to do, but it does seem like Ridley was told, you need to do this.
Have mercy. That's another one.
Well, that's another one. Yeah, totally.
Aw, nuts.
No, yeah, Kyle still has the page up, so we're not going to beat Kyle. David,
you got it, dude.
David Peoples, watch the hair. David Peoples was brought in to write the voiceover, and he learned that Hampton was also being written, told to write it. So now they're writing like competitively, because some people think David's stuff isn't read well, but Hampton's stuff doesn't sound good. Like, it's no one really has an idea of like what this should be. Ridley even says like Harrison came to him and said like this stuff sucks. Ridley agreed. They tried to rewrite it and they were like, I have no idea what he should say, because guess what? This movie was made to not have anybody saying stuff during these shots. And we watched the final cut. Our listeners maybe have only seen the final cut if they're watching along. And like any time where like the Vangelis music takes over and we see the city or we see him going through evidence, there's narration that's being delivered. Like, you know, I'm a killer, or what is it? It's like they don't advertise for killers in the newspaper.
It's
but
like,
that's what I did.
It's like, have you ever accidentally turned on like menu narration on like a program? It sounds like somebody talking over options you already see with like no tone, you know, like scene right. selection.
Well, and in the readings, there's these like unused outtakes from the voiceover recording sessions. Because
it sounds like when you hear, Siri reads your text, you know, like, but if like Harrison Ford was your Siri.
Well, and the thing is that you hear in these outtakes, Harrison is like, he'll say the line is like, I needed the streets and I needed food. Pretty weird. Pretty weird. Like, he doesn't like it out loud. The other thing that he says is he'll be like, was this real? Was it fake? I don't even know anymore. This is bizarre. God damn, this is bizarre. Those are two quotes. He didn't think it would be used. You know, the sort of the lore around it is that, like, it was written poorly intentionally so that the studio would say no to it. But they said yes. Then Harrison delivered it poorly so the studio would say no to it, and they still said yes. So
I've heard this story,
The sort of myth is that it is intentionally poorly written and poorly delivered that still got yes by the studio, but it seems like that might not be the case. On the last session,
if
Harrison...
If that was the case, why would you not then just be like, I'm not happy with it. I want to go redo
which
it.
Which is what the story ends up being. I think that might have been what they tried to do, and Harrison just lost... They all lost... Yeah. Harrison and Ridley lost that battle. Harrison said, on the last recording session, he couldn't find anybody at the studio. Like, he was in the booth and saw nobody in the glass, in the room, anywhere. Found some other room and found a guy he figured was the writer because he was just hammering away on a keyboard. And he goes and he's like, hi, I'm Harrison. And the writer just does this, like, just like shoos him away without saying anything and keeps writing. And Harrison leaves. 15 minutes later, he is given pages by that guy who is not Hampton Fancher or David Peoples or Ridley Scott. Nobody from the movie seems to be in on this session. And that is where most of the stuff used in the theatrical and international and every cut other than the director's and basically the second Ridley was able to do a director's cut of this, he'd removed the voiceover. But you hear even again in these outtakes, Harrison being really frustrated and people directing him really kind of aggressively. And again, it's not Ridley Scott, but you hear him laughing with Ridley Scott when they're trying to do it. It's not great. And a lot of it undercuts these great moments in the movie. So I'm going to send you guys some narration to read. This is what basically plays as Gaff, played by Edward James Olmos, has taken Deckard from the noodle bar to the police station, which is, again, sort of the first time you see the city for really what it is, and the first time the music really goes big over, you know, the city, LA, and Deckard and all that stuff. So again, I think a very effective part of the final cut and director's cut. But imagine, Richard, do you have it?
Yeah, I got
imagine it playing as, instead of this great, just enjoying the scenery and being overtaken, you hear this.
The charmer's name was Gaff. I'd seen him around. Brian must have upped him in the Blade Runner unit. That gibberish he talked was city speak. Gutter talk. A mishmash of Japanese, Spanish, German, what have you. I didn't really need a translator. I knew the language. Every good cop does. But I wasn't going to make it easier for him.
Yeah. But, like, is an audience like, yay. Now I get it.
Now I get it.
Like, a bunch of stuff you don't need. Because a mishmash of Japanese, Spanish, and German is just, like, Tagalog anyways. Like, just have the dude speaking Filipino.
It's just,
the audience
it's also
will
just
get it.
Like, answers aren't interesting. That's my thing, is that I don't understand how the filmmaker who understood how uninteresting answers are also made Prometheus.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like such a different philosophical approach to movies. Even the original Alien is like, this is scary because these are all employees who have no idea what is going on.
Do you think the answer...
Well, I would argue Prometheus gives you way more questions than it does answers.
Right, but it seems that the initial idea is to give you answers.
Well, it's a give an inch, sure. Take a mile situation.
Or Covenant is definitely answers.
Sure, sure.
But do you think, like, studio's answer to this sort of situation is pausing the screen and having that info come up, like a case file or some shit, stylistically?
Right, if it came up, like, the, remember that Blind Date show?
Yeah.
like next? Gaff's gonna mess up in 3, 2, 1.
Going to drop that he was in a Blade Runner unit in 3, 2.
How many languages make up city speak? All right, so
like the suicide
one of the most
squad.
Egregious. I have two more. One of the most egregious. This will go to Kyle, which I'm sending now, is a follow up to the tears and rain speech, which, like, for that to not be the end of that
he dies
scene,
and then he sits back up and he's like, and one more thing
is, well, all the VO was from Deckard, so imagine the shots, you know, they're covered in the rain and the blood. And Roy,
like,
Batty
oh
goes,
oh my God, did that dude just die?
And he says, all those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain.
I don't know why he saved my life. Maybe in those last moments, he loved life more than he ever had before. Not just his life, anybody's life, my life. All he wanted were the same answers the rest of us want. Where do I come from? Where am I going? How long have I got?
Like, why are we... Why do we
all
think that needs more?
All I could do is sit there and watch him die.
What the fuck?
Yeah, we know. We just watched Blade Runner, dude.
We're watching you watch him die. Like, it's again, it's sort of this, like... That's the other weird thing, is that they're assuming that's the stuff the audiences aren't understanding.
It's stuff in a video game that'd be a dialogue option I wasn't going to click anyways, you know?
Yeah. And so this last one I'm going to send to Richard, which is coming after... It comes after he has spoken with the police chief, Bryant. You know, the guy kind of brings him back in for one last job. And I will read the part of Bryant, and it'll cue Richard. So, Richard, did you just get it?
Refreshing.
This is good for the- All right, so Bryant said, I need you, Dex. This is a bad one. The worst one yet. I need the old Blade Runner. I need your magic.
I don't have it yet.
No?
No, it still says loading. 1 second. Sorry, you're going to have to cut this part.
And, mm-hmm.
Rewind it. All right. And
you got it?
Got it.
I need you, Dex. This is a bad one. The worst one yet. I need the old Blade Runner. I need your magic.
I love hamburgers. I love them so. I love hamburgers so much. I love
make hamburgers real so I can marry them.
I love eating them. I like cheeseburgers just fine, but hamburgers is my favorite food. It's my favorite food.
He doesn't prefer a cheeseburger?
Once me and this guy, Brian, went to a chicken wing eating contest and they were covered in buffalo sauce and it smelled so good.
Come on.
Keep going.
But when the event organizer asked me if I wanted to enter into the contest, I said, no thanks, Chelsea. Maybe if it was hamburgers, then I could stand a chance. Her name was Chelsea. I knew that I would only ever win a food eating competition if it was one where you eat hamburgers. I have a lot of practice and I would enjoy myself even if I got too full. I didn't want to embarrass myself in front of Brian, this police chief. He's an old friend, sure, but in these times, better keep an eye on him. I'd like to emphasize once more that hamburgers is my favorite food. I really love them.
So, a lot of this is just unnecessary.
Dude, I would say. Actually, honestly, I'd be back in if that happened. I'd be like, okay, what's the left hook this movie's gonna give me next, baby?
All over just the two of them looking over a projector.
God, what if a new cut of Blade Runner came out, and instead of, like, him eating noodles just, like, at that little stand, it's just him with chopsticks just slurping up a hamburger?
You know, sometimes it's...
how much I love hamburgers.
Sometimes it is nice to realize you're the crazy person cackling on a bus as you write that into your phone at, like, 4 in the afternoon.
Amazing.
That's got to be the t-shirt.
So now things, I mean, it kind of gets a little, we kind of wind down here. One last thing to note in the documentary is that Guillermo del Toro claims, like, vehemently that he prefers the voiceover, which I think means, like, instant canceled.
Well, yeah, it's why we don't have Hellboy 3 is because he said that.
He says he prefers his, like, Criterion Laserdisc, which has the voiceover. It was, like, I think one of the first Criterion films. It's, like, but has not got, because of its sort of renewed success, has not gotten the DVD or Blu-ray.
So my man is still out here, like, booting up his Laserdisc?
Well, whenever Guillermo wants to watch Blade Runner, for sure.
Yeah, he does not own the Blu-ray.
He's not going to rent it on Amazon.
So, lastly, there came a mandate to close on a sort of happier note with the audiences. For, like, you know, for the audiences to, like, go out of the theater and feel good about things, you know, instead of just, like, the sort of half, even though it's technically a happy ending, sort of the half cliffhanger. So, what is tacked on is footage of Rachel and Deckard driving through, like, the woods in a spinner, like, in the brightest sunshine you'll ever fucking seen. And
Ross
there's
is
like,
there and Chandler.
And down in and Rachel says, I'll be there for you. No, Rachel
could there be
like,
any
literally
tears
says,
in this rain?
Rachel says, are we in love? And Deckard says, sure. Which is really sweet. And
Toots, I only love one thing. It's called hamburgers.
Voiceover explains that apparently Tyrell told Deckard that Rachel will live forever, which is, like, not on screen. It's just this weird VO where, like, what if we say she's going to be alive forever? Exteriors of this scene, they kept trying to shoot footage of the car, of the spinner car driving along the highway in Big Bear. And got nothing. They were just with horrible weather.
How
so
big is
one
this
last,
bear?
One last interest. It's not a Napoleon bear. One last interesting, like, nugget is that Ridley Scott knew, The Shining had just come out the year before. And the opening of The Shining is famous with those giant, those huge helicopter shots of the car driving up by the lake to the hotel. And Ridley, knowing Stanley Kubrick, knows, like, there's no way Stanley went to America. There's no way Stanley got in a helicopter. So he probably had people shoot helicopter footage for, like, a fucking week. And they called Stanley Kubrick, asked them if they could use outtakes from that shoot for their footage, basically, like, one of the last shots of the theatrical cut. Stanley liked Alien and said, yeah, you can take it as long as you don't use anything that's in The Shining. They say, great. Stanley asks, like, what did you shoot in? And they, what's interesting is that The Shining was shot flat on spherical lenses, and Blade Runner was shot anamorphic. So because of that, by squeezing The Shining footage, it made the car look like a sci-fi car. It, like, made it look like a weird, wide, elongated, not real car. So basically, they were able, a few days later, like, a week's worth of helicopter shots showed up, and they got to pick from weird, if you watch the theatrical cut or anything that's not the director's or final, you'll see weird Shining outtakes at the end.
That's so bizarre.
Huh.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's ever been done with other movies.
Yeah,
From, like, major auteur to major auteur, I feel like,
yeah, that's
no.
That's a good Cracked article.
Yeah.
Cracked, if you're listening.
Well, because you see things like where, like, Michael Bay reuses his same plates, like the same, like, highway chase plates in, like, three movies.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Where, like, there's either an Autobot destroying a car, like, another car destroying a car, or, like, something in the island. Like, yeah, but that's, again, just, I mean, Michael Bay is another guy who's just sort of resourceful and gets movies done for somehow cheaper than, I feel like Michael Bay's movies do look like they cost $500 million. And, like, yeah. he's another example of a guy who's like, well, how can we do this a little easier? So, yeah, another great example of, like, Ridley really early in his career being really resourceful and really smart and not being afraid to reach out to someone like Stanley Kubrick. And that is sort of the story of The Shining. Everything else is kind of well-known. It comes out, does okay, but it builds up.
That's the story of Blade Runner, not The Shining.
Yeah. Well, no, we'll talk about The Shining. Were we not just talking about The Shining this whole time? It's the story of Blade Runner. It comes out. There are tons of cuts of this movie, TV cuts and this and that, but it's not until 92 that there's a director's cut that comes from basically, you know, Ridley's stock has gone up, Harrison Ford's stock has gone up, and the movie is just sort of this revered thing. So for the 10-year anniversary, a director's cut is made, which removes the voiceover and adds back in, elements of the unicorn dream, which is so integral to the last piece of the origami with, you know, Gaff and all that. And then the final cut, 15 years later, had an entire production process of digitally replacing that stunt woman's face, of digitally replacing Harrison Ford's face in one scene with his son. His son was the age that his dad was when they made Blade Runner. They needed him to just sort of be another facial replacement for a dialogue scene. And they did that. And it's just this, there was a little bit of a budget for Ridley to create sort of his last definitive creative statement with the movie, which is what you get with the final cut. So it's almost to the point where 2049 is only a sequel to the final cut. It really only works canonically with what is established in that, because the final cut hits home most of all this mystery of Deckard being a replicant or not, and sort of the idea of the movie being about that question for him.
Well, thank you for sharing, guys, and thanks for listening. Kyle, what are we going to listen to next week? What are we going to watch, if we're going to watch anything?
Well, guys, we're not watching anything. We're going to take the podcast up a notch and craft a story. Minecraft. We're going to talk about the development of the video game Minecraft.
And the movie based on it.
Yeah, and the movie they tried to make a Minecraft the movie.
Which we yeah, you guys aren't crazy. This is one of the first times we're doing something that's like there's nothing. Nothing has been made here.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you can go on YouTube and watch Minecraft the movie, but it's just made by a bunch of 12-year-olds.
There's plenty of Richard picks that you can be like, nothing has been made here, but this is truly a nothing has been made here.
Dragons movie.
Yeah. Are we going to revisit Dungeons and Dragons soon, by the way? We're going to watch that again?
We got to watch the new one when it comes out and talk about it.
Yeah, starring Chris Pine.
Star of Wonder Woman 84.
As Dungeon.
All right, y'all. Listen, you don't have to, nobody has homework. It's like a great weekend or a great week of school. No one has homework. You just have to tune in next week to Minecraft the movie. Thank you for listening this week, y'all. You can catch me on Instagram at HGSpike. And thank you to Van Foley for our intro music. His new album, Got the Whole Room Looking at Me, is probably on your phone somewhere. You just got to look it up.
Bye, demons.
Bye.
Does anybody else have an Instagram?
We do.
They know. They fucking know.
They know.
They fucking know. You want my fucking Instagram? Go listen to another episode, you piece of shit. Hey,
how about the fact that none of you have added me on PlayStation to play anything together? All right?
All right. Bye.
Pepper Jack fans. Blowing so much pack, look like Drift Race, a movie. In here with